It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
And I can't stand him.
Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soze. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The voice you just heard is the man who decided to do Throwback Friday of old intros. That's Kobe Slagle.
What's going to happen? I thought of that randomly yesterday.
What is that from?
Singing in the Rain. Where she's going over the lines.
That's right. Very good. See, it is because it is Musical Friday, apparently. It is a music heavy show for good reason. We'll get to my film in a little bit, but we have company in studio. We have Nick Oler, who is the grand poobah of the Irvington Creative Music Plus Film Festival. It says plus, not and. So, and he's here to talk about a documentary called The Case of the Three-Sided Dream. Hello, Nick.
Hey.
And then we have a couple of gentlemen who are in the Belfries production of 1776, which opens next Friday. It's also Hawaiian Shirt Day. But we have Mark Toomey and Dwayne Leatherman. Mark is playing John Adams. Dwayne is playing Ben Franklin. Hello, gentlemen.
Hey, hello Matt. Glad to be with you today.
Good to have you guys. You guys got to lean in a little bit more there.
All right.
And full disclosure with these two gentlemen, I have directed them in different shows, which we will get to sometime.
Ah.
So, and of course, tonight Emma and I are finally seeing the most beautiful Golda on the face of the earth. Hmm. My wife at Beef and Boards in Fiddler. So, Cole, while we're here,
yep.
I wanted to share this with the two gents. But Abdul Kim Shabazz, one of our regulars here at Film Sociology, has his own intro, and I think you will appreciate this when you hear it. So,
okay. The blackest brother in the galaxy, Nubian God.
What's a Nubian?
Will someone shut that man up?
Never. Never.
Because if Abdul were here, he would tell you he wants to audition, and he already has the role. I'm doing Abdul's bits poorly, but he wants to be one of the messengers. But as he's leaving, he's going to turn around and look at Jefferson and go, "By the way, Mom says hi, and she wants eggs and some milk and some butter before you come home tonight."
Perfect.
There you go. So. Okay, now that we've gotten that, I know I'm getting a text from Abdul in about 3 seconds.
That's my material. You're stealing.
You're stealing. That's right, because if you're listening to public radio without pledging, you're stealing. Thank you, Abdul. This is why I'm not allowed at management meetings. Anyway, lots going on. So today, ladies and gentlemen, I guess opening in theaters today is the latest financial boost for the Purple Rose Theater. That's known as Dumb and Dumber 2.
Oh.
Good for Jeff Daniels. I think of him doing this film besides the fact that they offered him an obscene amount of money. But I'm hoping some of that will go into the Purple Rose Theater, which is his theater in southern Michigan. Just like you saw all those films with Laurence Olivier in the 70s, which helped finance the National Theater, and all of the De Niro films of the 90s and the aughts to help get the Tribeca Film Festival off the ground. I'm just guessing on this one. Mm-hmm. But there was a film opening today that I am more excited about than anything that's opening in theaters in the last couple of weeks. And this includes Interstellar. This includes Nightcrawler. This includes Big Hero 6. I attended the press screening of this film over a week ago, and I'm still buzzed about it in a good way. And I've talked with Ed Johnson Ott, my colleague at Nuvo, my fellow critic who writes for Newball, and of course Chris Lloyd, who's on the Film Yap, and I think we're all in agreement on this. Which what? Yes. Would you like to share this with the rest of the class?
No. It just so we all agree, right?
We all agree. Yes, right. So anyway,
we all like this.
Opening in theaters today is a film called Whiplash.
Oh yeah,
and it stars J.K. Simmons and Miles Teller, who I'm going to remember his name because I've been saying the kid from Divergent.
Yeah,
but it's
that's right.
It's that kid, and it is set in a music conservatory in New York City, and it's a young freshman student who wants to be a part of the competitive big band ensemble. The only thing getting in his way, besides his own determination and state of mind, is J.K. Simmons, who mm-hmm. is the band leader who rules with an iron fist and would make Buddy Rich blush. Kobe, play the audio, please.
This place is nice.
I really like the music that they play. Ballas on the drums. I'm part of Schaefer's top jazz orchestra. It's the best music school in the country.
The key is to just relax. Don't worry about the numbers. Don't worry about what the other guys are thinking. You're here for a reason. Have fun.
5, 6, and.
I want to be great.
And you're not.
We got Buddy Rich here.
Little trouble there.
You're rushing. Here we go.
5, 6, and.
Were you rushing or were you dragging?
I don't know.
If you deliberately sabotage my band, I will gut you like a pig.
Oh, my dear God. Are you one of those single-tier people?
You are a worthless pansy ass who is now weeping and slobbering all over my drum set like a 9-year-old girl.
So how's it going with the studio band?
Good. Yeah, I think he likes me more now.
I push people beyond what's expected of them. I believe that is an absolute necessity.
I want to be one of the greats. And because I'm doing that, it's going to take up more of my time. And this is why I don't think that we should be together.
I would never let him put my son through hell. Why would you let him get away with what he did to you?
There are no two words in the English language more harmful than good job.
Walking out of this, of course, I come up with my NPR snarky pitches. My first two reactions walking out of Whiplash was, if you combine Black Swan with Full Metal Jacket, or if Lars von Trier directed Fame. those who know, you know exactly what that is. This is an absolutely brutal film to watch. And in a sick way, it is at the same time a cautionary tale and almost an infomercial for a music academy. Mm-hmm. This is a fictitious mm-hmm. one, mm-hmm. but it kind of draws that line on, as you hear in the dialogue, of what do you need to do in order to be the best? Do you need to be pushed? Do you need to be verbally and physically abused, as Simmons' character does in this?
I saw the trailer of this, Matt, and mm-hmm. I was just captivated by it. And you know, where is that line?
Exactly.
Where is that line?
And you see where in a sick way these guys are kind of made for each other. This is a 19-year-old kid who is willing to dismiss everything out of his life, including his dad, played by Paul Reiser, including a great girlfriend, just so he can go into a drumming studio alone with a box of Band-Aids and play until his hands bleed. Mm-hmm. We mentioned earlier Buddy Rich. There's a lot of Buddy Rich in this. Now, we can't play it here on the show, but if you get a chance, go to YouTube and you can hear some of Buddy Rich's more famous rants. We here at Film Sociology, we are pro rant, as long as it's not happening
be
to us.
Band rant or sports rant.
Sports coaches are really good. Band leaders are really good, especially if you're not in the band. I mean, Rich was famous. It was notorious for firing guys during shows. And there is one in particular where I think he stops the band bus, screams at the guy, and throws his luggage out of the bus.
Gosh.
Just the absurd brutality of what goes on in this school, and Ed Johnson made a point, and I loved. I don't think he created the headline, although he uses. I believe he used. Yeah, he does use it in his article. He refers to it as academic S&M. Hi, Dwayne.
I'm familiar with some of that.
He's fine. Dwayne's fine. But there is that, you know, push-pull, what does it take to become the best? And the fact that good job is you know, apparently death in J.K. Simmons' world, his character's world. Both of them are exceptional in this. The kid is not going to get as Ed pointed out, J.K. Simmons is going to get all the attention on this one because he's the Taskmaster, because he's Arlie Emery. You know, but this kid goes toe to toe and stands his ground with him as an actor, and it should be noted. But Simmons is a classic that guy. And he had a trifecta when he really got noticed. So it was, of course, playing J. Jonah Jameson in the Spider-Man trilogy, the Tobey Maguire trilogy, was a psychiatrist on Law and Order and the white supremacist in Oz. All of those happening at the same time.
And he was in Thank You for Smoking.
He was in Thank You for Smoking and The Lady Killers, the Coen Brothers version of The Lady Killers. So he's been that guy for a while. And as my daughter now, you know, the insurance guy and the dad from Juno. And I know he's in The Closer and everything else. But Ed Johnson made a point of saying he played a white supremacist in Oz and is a nicer person than this guy in Whiplash. And what Simmons gets and Simmons gets to run the gamut on this. Yes, we've seen him be aggressive verbally and physically with people, although it does come to a whole different level. I think Malcolm Tucker would blush a little bit for you fans of In the Loop. But there are a few moments where you can see the attraction to this guy. He loves his music. When the music is working, it's pure splendid awesomeness. There's a moment where a student of his dies and he plays some of their music. And so you see some humanity behind this kind of monster exterior.
Well, that's interesting because you don't see that in the trailer at all.
No, not at all. And I that should be noted is that there are those moments. You see, and of course, the times there are intimate two people scenes with he and the student, he's going to use that to his advantage as the film goes on. And there's a climax, which I don't want to give away, but it's an absolute gut punch over what you could do to a musician in the worst possible way professionally.
Wow.
I mean, it is this is not for everybody. It is, you know, there's some blood, but it's not, you know, in some ways it is a more violent picture than say something by Sam Peckinpah or any of the action films that were out in the summer. Just fascinating to watch.
And it looks very intense.
It is passion. Really, really intense. And there's a lot of good big band music in it as well, as you heard some of it on that. There's even a scene where the kid forgets his drums and his car gets hit, and he still crawls out of the wreckage and runs to the competition. That's, you know, that's an example of the absurdism of what somebody will do to get a one rating or to get on the good graces with this guy. And as far as the teacher's standpoint, as far as leading the big band, if you can't do it, he'll get somebody else who will. Mm-hmm. You know, he or she will find another student to take that person's place and interchange them and probably possibly do the exact same thing. It is absolutely fascinating. Lots of layers. You're right. They don't show that enough in the trailer, but there is enough gray area here. It's exhilarating to watch. It's exhausting, but it's exhilarating as well. And I think it's something we're going to be talking about at the end of the year wrap up in December. I'm really hoping a lot of people, especially those that apparently give out pieces of gold to people, really take a look at J.K. Simmons for this. It's really, really, really good.
Yes, this is one of the biggest things he's done. A single role.
As far as a lead, yeah. Because, I mean, this is a guy, if you go on J.K. Simmons' IMDb page, he's constantly working. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether it's, you know, like one scene in Labor Day or two scenes here or doing the commercials or appearing on a TV show, you know, he's always in demand and always working. And from what I've seen, I haven't seen him do a bad job in anything. I mean, the guy, he's in some cases, is usually the highlight of something that he is a part of. So fascinating to watch. I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about 1776, because that is opening next weekend. That's running the 21st through the 30th at the Belfry. And you can go to belfrytheaterre.com for information on that. This is
Actually, we're not running it. It's a Belfry production, but this is unique, Matt.
Ah, please.
Because we've partnered with Ivy Tech,
okay.
The new Ivy Tech in Noblesville, which for some people was either the old Noblesville High School or the old Noblesville Middle School. But we're working a relationship with Dan Clark, the president there, to use the auditorium, which is amazing. It's 350 seat, about three times the size of the Belfry, and it fits perfectly for this size of a show.
Absolutely. I'm glad you clarified that. That's absolutely true. For those who don't know, this is a fun musical. If you just said somebody was going to make a musical about the Declaration of signing the Declaration
Boring.
Of Independence, but yeah, a lot of people would say that. But I think it won Best Musical when it came out in 1969, and then the film came out 3 years later, and it's kind of set a precedent because most of the original cast was in the film. Mm-hmm. And in the late 60s and early 70s, you had movie musicals with movie stars that a lot of them really couldn't carry a tune, Paint Your Wagon.
yes, we did.
So anyway, but it is a fun show, really, really crackerjack dialogue. And if you know the more history you know, the more fun it is to watch this.
You know what's captivating about this, Matt, is all the characters in this show, there's 25 men, we'll sit around and talk about these characters. All of us have done research on our own mm-hmm. about these unique characters, and it's fascinating. It's history. It's like history for us coming alive.
Absolutely. And Mark is playing John Adams, sit down, and you're playing Ben Franklin Duane.
Correct.
First time with the show, both of you?
No.
Really? Okay.
No.
Have you played Adams before?
I have not, Matt. And, you know, I've only been involved in theater about 8 years.
It seems longer, and that's a compliment.
Thank you. But, no, this is I've done this. This is a third time. It's the only show I've done more than once. And there's probably four or five other characters in the show that I'd love to play because each character is so unique and so important. But, of course, this was a bucket list role for me.
Now, who'd you do before?
First time I played Reverend Witherspoon,
okay.
And that was at Scottish Rite. And then I played Richard Henry Lee for a Lamb's Club production.
That's right. And then you played Franklin before?
In a cut-down version of the play for the Lamb's Club, yes.
Okay.
But I started with Bartlett, who was one of the smallest roles in the show. I did that in 1995, I believe it was, at the old Edavine Repertory Theater at CTS.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And then in 2001, I played Hancock at Footlight Musicals. Mm-hmm. So, but Ben Franklin, I've been working my way up to Ben Franklin because he is my dream role.
Absolutely.
One of the dream roles. I love Ben Franklin. And
Dwayne's marvelous in it.
Oh, thank you. And Mark is marvelous also. We're mm-hmm. having a lot of fun working together.
And you guys are marvelous else in the studio.
And Matt,
yeah, we're all marvelous.
Amazing. Just marvelous. Stop. You're just saying that because I'm the host. Anyway, and it's so funny because now you have to get together with my father-in-law and have dueling Franklins. Because not only has my father-in-law worked, he did it with you at Scottish Rite, but he also played Ben Franklin in a commercial. With, that company
Seriously?
Of the same name.
Oh.
Every now and then. You know the one, because it has the Greg.
Yes, I do.
It has the Greg, is it Greg? No, Tommy Toon. It's the Tommy
yes.
Toon.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's that commercial.
That commercial with that phone
number. I didn't know he did that.
Yeah, that's my dad-in-law. So,
wow. Okay.
Yes, he is a marvelous
and actually,
actor.
You two could. No, there's a joke about doing Franklin-like things. We're not going to do that.
Yeah. You're on the air, man.
Yeah, I know. As I've said before, it's sort of a family show. but this is something that we at the Soucy House watch every July 4th. Mm-hmm. Every July 4th. If it's that, between that and Yankee Doodle Dandy. Mm-hmm. And so you guys will appreciate Lynn, my lovely wife, Lynn, the most beautiful Golda ever, mm-hmm. Always reminds me of this. She goes, "You want Martha, you're married to Abigail."
Exactly.
And I was like, yes, dear. So anyway, how is this production working out? You said you have it's a bigger audience, but also bigger space?
It's a much larger space. It's about three times the size of the Belfry Theater stage, if you've been there.
Yes.
And it has a lot of wing space, and it's just we're how do you manage this? Of course, as you know, if you've seen the show, mm-hmm. the set is not the pivotal portion of this production. It's the costuming and the staging of the men on stage and women. So, but it's been an interesting journey for us. We're looking at the Belfry is looking at this as a potential longer term partnership with Ivy Tech too. So there's
fingers crossed on that.
Yeah, many things to be considered.
Now, how is it dancing in these get-ups?
Difficult at the points. We have tight shoes. Mm-hmm. And of course, the ladies have hoop skirts on. So
I know women have rehearsal skirts. Was there some apparatus that you guys had to wear in order during rehearsal to get used to it?
No, we have not. We have not. But again, both Franklin and I waltz with Martha, and we've done that with the hoop skirt once. And full dress rehearsal is Sunday, so we'll see how that goes.
We did have a funny thing happen last night where Martha and Tom Jefferson meet where she comes to Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and Adams has sent for her. She jumps into his arms while he accidentally had his foot on her skirt. So luckily,
she was about 3 feet in the air.
It was preserved. The skirt did not come all the way off, but it was pulled a little bit.
Darn close.
We have to be careful of stepping on the ladies' dresses.
That's true. And with Franklin, that's a 2-drink minimum.
That's right.
Look at him up.
Been perked up there.
Well, you guys got I love this. We have a clip. In studio, we have a live clip. I usually have Kobe doing stuff online to pull audio, but we have a scene. Guys, what are you going to do for us?
Well, this one, we can do music as well. This one scene is when Adams has just been told by Congress to sit down repeatedly, and he's frustrated. He's
open up a window.
Open up a window, and Franklin's obviously missing in that scene. And, of course, Franklin is one of Adams' advocates. So he storms out of Congress.
With friends like these.
Yeah. He's yelling for Franklin. Where are you, Franklin? So that's where this picks up.
All right, guys, let's hear it.
Franklin, where in God's name were you when I needed you?
Right here, John, being preserved for posterity. Do you like it?
It stinks.
As ever, the soul of tact.
Well, the man's no Botticelli.
And the subject's no Venus.
Franklin, you heard what I suffered in there?
Heard? Of course I heard. Along with the rest of Philadelphia. Lord, your voice is piercing, John.
Well, I wish to heaven my arguments were. By God, Franklin, when will they make up their minds? With one hand, they can raise an army, dispatch one of their own to lead it, and cheer the news from Bunker's Hill. While with the other hand, they wave the olive branch, begging the king for a happy and permanent reconciliation. Why, damn it, Fat George has declared us in rebellion. Why in bloody hell can't they?
John, really, you talk as if independence were the rule. It's never been done before. No colony has ever broken from the parent stem in the history of the world.
Oh, damn it, Franklin, you make us sound treasonous.
Do I? Treason. Treason is a charge invented by the winners as an excuse for hanging the losers.
Well, I have more to do than to stand here listening to you quote yourself.
Oh, no, that was a new one.
Oh, damn it, Franklin, we're at war.
To defend ourselves, nothing more. We expressed our displeasure, the English moved against us, and we in turn have resisted. Now our fellow congressmen want to effect a reconciliation before it becomes a war.
Reconciliation, my ass? The people want independence.
The people have read Mr. Paine's Common Sense. I doubt the Congress has. John, why don't you give it up? Nobody listens to you. You're obnoxious and disliked.
I'm not promoting John Adams. I'm promoting independence.
Evidently, they cannot help connecting the two.
Well, what are you suggesting?
Let's somebody else in Congress propose.
Never!
And scene. Now, Mark, this is... For those who know, John Adams is aggressive. Not quite J.K. Simmons aggressive,
although
that's...
He doesn't throw anything.
Not yet. He could. Well, that would open up a window, a chair. Mm-hmm. But and he's not the villain, but he is very confrontational. Mm-hmm. And I think when you get to play a role like that, you get to unleash some, not necessarily demons, but you get to let a little bit of something fly.
Yes, indeed.
Was that the case in this?
Yes, indeed it is. And you know, obviously, I did some studying of John Adams. I've read McCullough's book on mm-hmm. Adams, which is amazing. And just a side note, there's so much in this show that is historically correct, mm-hmm. right out of Adams' life, to the 1,000 love letters that he and Abigail sent back and forth to each other. So I think getting into that character, you know this as a director, you want to kind of feel what that person feels. So all the time on stage, I feel like all my muscles are clenched.
Yes.
You know, and then I'm in someone's face nearly all the time. I just have to temper how intense my voice is during all of that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's a chance to release. You want to feel the intensity, the passion that Adams had and not lose that.
Dwayne, what do the other guys say about him when he's on the
He's obnoxious and disliked.
Now, and, of course, with Franklin is a different thing because it is kind of one of the more decadent characters, especially by comparison. I mean,
definitely.
I will say it's almost a patriotic Felix and Oscar with you two.
That's true.
And for the record, I had Dwayne play his first villain, so he has done decadence before. You're welcome. No.
Thank you. And he let me use his daughter as a footstool.
Yes, we did do that. Although I have to say, yes, he played Cardinal Richelieu in Three Musketeers many moons ago. And yeah, if you see me on the street, I will tell you how my daughter was used as a prop. It's so funny. Mm-hmm. Richmond Civic is doing that script this year.
The Three Musketeers.
They're doing it at the end of the season. So I will be intrigued to see how. I'm not directing it. I already did it once, but and I did use one of your moves playing Professor Moriarty. What I've learned is if you play a bad guy, one of the things, if you really want to make the audience uncomfortable, smell people on stage.
Yes.
Buttocks clench when you do that. So.
I should try that with Dickinson, shouldn't I?
It's really cool that you guys are doing it at Ivy Tech, because when I first, like, I'm glad you corrected me, because when I first heard the Belfry, and I had this concern about Musketeers, is it's a small stage.
Yes, indeed.
How are you going to do all that stuff, especially because the cast is 25?
25 men,
25
two women.
Men and two women.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Amazing, yeah.
You're using the aisles, you're going to the back.
Yeah, well, this is fascinating because, you know, it's new for me. I've not done just the Belfry, but thinking of the Belfry, you're so limited in what you can do on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Here, the ability to walk and through the stage and across, I mean, it's different.
Absolutely.
Much different.
For those who may not be familiar with the Belfry, it is an old church, an old rural church outside Noblesville that seats about 100. Very tight quarters, very small stage, no fly space or wing space at all. And so,
but it is intimate.
But it is intimate.
That's
it is
nice
intimate theater.
Which means keep your feet off the stage.
Yes.
That is exactly right. There are, yes.
I've been known to kick a few off.
If you see me on the street, opening night of Musketeers, my director's speech. I was like Bernard Goetz in the subway. I was like, oh, finally somebody's doing it. I get to say this. So, wow. We'll get another bit from you guys in a little bit. But Nick's been hanging out. You see, you got a free show this afternoon.
Free.
Well, this is a free preview.
Oh,
this,
yeah, yeah. No,
this performance
I'm
art we got going.
You know, we may run up to Noblesville and check it out.
Go.
But my 9 years old is watching those Liberty Kids videos, and so he's like
perfect.
All down with that. So that's like folds in perfectly to what he's
cool. And you're running the Irvington Creative Music Plus Film Festival, which is happening at the Irvington Theater and Irvington Vinyl. And one of the things that's happening is you're showing a documentary, which I got to watch this week, called The Case of the Three-Sided Dream, which is about Rahsaan Roland Kirk, jazz musician. Coe, could you play the trailer, if you would, please?
Got it.
He took everything to extreme. He took everything he could do, he would take it as far as he could take it.
One, two, one, three, four.
Six or more jazz instruments at the same time, then you do run the risk of being thought of as being more of a showman than you are a musician. But Rahsaan Roland Kirk is used to that kind of comment. He's blind, he comes from Ohio, and if you watch him play, then it's quite clear that he's using all those instruments not just as a gimmick, but out of a sort of frustrated desire to get through to the audience on as many different levels as possible.
He
he was really doing things I think other people just thought about doing.
He just, whatever he touched, he could make music with it.
I just like dealing with the natural way of being and natural vibration of music.
I'd lay down and have these dreams. I'd hear different instruments simultaneously, and then one of the dreams was quite clear because it showed me playing instruments simultaneously. So after that, I set out to find the instruments that I heard in my dreams.
There you go. That is it's a trailer for The Case of the Three-Sided Dream, which is going to be at the Irving Theater, right, Nick?
Yeah, we're going to be running it four times. And we have seven musical acts playing also, so there'll be an opportunity to check out the film and check out some new and experimental music also. And it's all for $15. Gets you in. You get to see the movie. Get to see seven bands, and you know, hang out and have some fun.
Not bad. Hmm. Now, for those who don't, Kirk was as you heard, was blind from Columbus, Ohio. Saxophonist, although played flute. The bit that probably is known for is playing three horns at the same time. Also, wow. Was known to play the flute with his mouth and his nose. But this was a guy, and it was kind of the post Coltrane, especially the last years of Coltrane's life, when he was making these 45-minute musical explorations. And I think Kirk is a product of that, far as expanding and going way beyond anybody else had done before with jazz.
Yeah, I mean, when the opportunity came up to show this film in Indianapolis, you know, I felt really blessed because, you know, Rashawn's music is some pretty deep music, and you know, he, you know, takes his approach to generating sound. It's beyond just like technique. You know, there's a spiritual element to that. There's a spiritual layer to it, and you know, I think that as everything changed in the late 60s, you know, with the British invasion and, you know, the advent of, you know, rock and roll and the rise of the guitar, and as jazz, you know, kind of went out into the interstellar space there, I think that, you know, that exposure to that music and the newer musicians from the 70s kind of, they didn't get that mainstream exposure that, you know, a lot of the more popular musical acts, even experimental acts of the day did. And I think that, you know, Adam has done a brilliant job of threading in, you know, a lot of direct dialogue from Rashawn with, you know, some animation to keep you engaged.
Yeah, because the animations used played over some live recordings.
Oh, yeah.
Because Rashawn was not afraid to talk, and not just in between songs. He was constantly communicating with his audience.
Oh, yeah. And unlike Miles Davis and some of the other musicians, they wouldn't say anything. You pretty much knew what Rashawn was thinking.
And of course, at that time, Miles wanted to be a rock star. Miles wanted rock star money, too. But as far as plugging in his horn and having a giant group and going, you know, which he did with Bitches Brew in a silent way, those, and then all of his 70s recordings. But Kirk also, you know, one, talked about referring to jazz as black classical music.
Yeah.
Did not like the term jazz. But yeah, because of his blindness and his dedication, knowing the power and the physics of sound to be able to bend it, shape it, change it. And then also, as you alluded to, getting jazz more visible. There's a fun sequence that talks about how there was kind of a militant jazz movement that invaded the Dick Cavett Show.
Yeah.
Which I'd never heard before, he actually played on Ed Sullivan.
Yeah.
And
the footage is amazing.
Yeah, he was asked to play a jazz version of one, I think it was My Cherie Amour, and well, he played something else. but much to Sullivan's credit, the Ed Sullivan Show already had to deal with the Doors a few years ago when they broke a rule.
Ooh.
But Sullivan seemed all right.
Yeah, he seemed fine with it.
But it was just fascinating to see that type of jazz on national television, unheard of at its time.
Oh, yeah.
And for those who don't, and near the end, of course, he had a stroke and then was able to get horns reconstructed that he could play with one hand. And we did that for the last few years of his life. And his last gig was in Bloomington.
Yeah.
Barry Childs Helton, thank you for expanding on that. He actually got to see that last show.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where it is at, Cobe. We'll have to look on that. You're cool. The Bloomington correspondent. You're the Bloomington expert there. But yeah, it is a really cool documentary, and he's one of those guys you've seen the name, you've seen the imagery. Hopefully, you've heard his music. I only have two of his albums, and I now need to go and get more.
I'm with you. I mean, after seeing the film, I've already back ordered a good chunk of his catalog, and it's on its way.
Exactly.
This is cool. I mean, you've most likely seen if you're a music fan, if you're a jazz fan in particular, you've most likely seen the picture of the three saxes.
And that's something like this is like it. Greg Bacon does that bit here in Indy. And by the way, I mean the bit with all due respect. It's really impressive. Mm-hmm. I can't, I stuff three fries in my mouth, but nobody takes offense on it. So shut up, Cobe. So there's that. Speaking of IU,
yep.
Cobe, what is happening at your alma mater?
This evening, Friday, November 14th at 6:30 p.m., coming up here in about an hour or so, we have Goodbye to Language 3D, foreign language drama from this year.
A 3D film from Jean-Luc Godard.
Wow.
Who's like 80, I think. And reports on it, it's still pretty good. So no. Let me try that. That sounded like Elmore Leonard.
That's terrific.
No, here at Film Sociology, we are pro filmmakers in their 70s and 80s. Kurosawa, Altman, Eastwood. The fact that Godard made a 3D film at this stage in his career, go for it, man. Mm-hmm. What else you got?
So that's at 6:30. Follow that up at 9:30 tonight. IU Cinema from 1964, Hard Day's Night.
Excellent.
Nice. Yes. Nice. And then Midnight Movies at IU continues tonight from 1984, Repo Man.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. All I wanted was a Pepsi, and she wouldn't give it to me. And we can't talk about John Wayne. All right.
Saturday, November 15th, 3 o'clock from 1925, The Big Parade.
All right.
At 6:30 in the Social Computer series in IU Cinema, we have TPB AFK, The Pirate Bay Away from Keyboard from 2013, documentary there. And then the Midnight Movie Series continues Saturday night, though it is not at midnight. It's at 9:30 with Repo Man again.
So it's a 9:30 screening midnight. Of a midnight movie.
It's midnight yep. somewhere.
There you go.
At the Oasis.
It's midnight somewhere.
Thanks, Buffett.
Then Sunday, November 16th, 3 o'clock from 1946, Canyon Passage. And then in the Hollywood Renaissance series from 1984, 16 Candles at 6:30 p.m.
I see. All right. Mm-hmm. Little John Hughes there. It was also announced this week, I think maybe it was yesterday, the winter film series at the IMA.
Yep.
Friday nights, go to these. And this is,
you can do stuff in January.
You can do stuff in cold weather. You can go to stuff now. No. Okay, this is the thing. Lots of people, they hibernate. No, this is the time more than ever to go see live theater, go see live music. Get out. Stick a crowbar in your wallet and go support the arts. Crying out loud.
Amen.
Yeah, yeah, do it.
Exactly. So now's the time to go check this out. Or you can go to Beef and Boards and see My Wife and Fiddler on the Roof. And then you can drive up to Anderson University to see It's a Wonderful Life, the radio play.
Do you have the schedule? I've got the schedule.
December
here.
6th and 7th. That's the Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the IMA.
Oh, the IMA, yeah, I have that.
Okay.
I'm done with my diatribe. Go to the live music and go see theater for crying out loud. Anyway, yes, thank you for steering me back, Cobe. The IMA film series, the Socies will be there, the Slagles will probably be there. And anyway, go check this out. Starting on January 2nd, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Cool. Oh, wow.
Very good, cool. Good stuff. That's going to be fun to see on the big screen, and I think we're going to try to talk the Emma into that. It's not our first.
She not seen that?
No. She's Coen Brothers-wise, Fargo, Lebowski, Raising Arizona.
Okay.
So we're getting her there, baby steps. January 9th, Wizard of Oz. Be cool to see on the big screen.
Awesome.
Emma's here for this one. January 16th, Miyazaki's Spirited Away. Great Japanese animation. January 23rd, Fargo.
Oh, my.
Gotta go.
Yeah. Especially in January, right?
Exact perfect January movie.
If I'm not, I think...
And don't sneak in Arby's.
I was going to say, are they doing it this year? Did I already see... Are they doing it this year, or was it last year when they showed they showed Fargo in the Winter Night series, but they did it outside?
Oh, that's crazy talk.
Oh, my goodness.
No. No, because then you can't bring a flask in. That's no, you don't bring a flask.
Now, is this done inside in the Toby?
In the yeah, this is in the Toby.
Goodness.
And there's local snacks, there's local liquid, and that sort of thing.
Here we go. For this season of the Winter Nights, the IMA is planning several immersive cinematic experiences, starting with the January 23rd screening of Fargo outside in the IMA amphitheater.
I'm bringing my flask. Sorry, that's...
Oh, man. Make sure you bring a picnic.
So wait a minute. So does that mean for...
experience the Coen Brothers classic in its appropriately frigid setting.
So yeah, you will bring Arby's. So that means on January 30th, when they show A Hard Day's Night, they're going to chase us around the hallways.
No, let's see.
No, not doing that.
No,
not recreating Liverpool 64.
No, nothing there.
February 6th, Bringing Up Baby with Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn. February 13th, An Affair to Remember, Deborah Carr and Cary Grant.
Sure.
February 20th, the 1924 silent movie version of Peter Pan with live performance, live accompaniment by the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra.
Wow.
That one's going to be pricey, but it's worth it. It's live music. Stick a crowbar in your wallet. And then February 27th, the last one. Yes. Are they going to do this one outside? Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Oh.
Don't bring spam.
Oh.
Don't do that.
Does not look like it.
Yeah, no, that's not an inactive one. We're not having killer rabbits and coconuts. We're not doing that. See, this is what it's like. If you do it for one, you should do it for all of them. Although Lynn will not get green for Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. And that means we have to wear fake beards and sing Foggy Mountain Boy's brother. Not doing that. So anyway.
Moonshine.
Didn't hear that. And neither did you guys. Anyway, that's January 2nd through February 27th, Friday nights at the IMA. So that's going to be a fun night of movies. Also, at the Aircraft Theater on the 14th and the 15th, so tonight and tomorrow, down in Main Street in Franklin, 1939, you can't take it with you.
Oh, yeah.
Have you guys done that play?
I've been in it.
Who would you play? DePenna?
It's been so long. The father.
Okay.
I forget his character name.
Frank Capra. It's with Jimmy Stewart, Gene Arthur. It's a fun, eclectic family who they are definitely their own zip code. And when the when one of the sons brings his fiance home and Kobe, family hilarity ensues.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's done by Capra, so it's very sweet. Anyway, that is happening. Lynn did that. She played the mother at Beef and Boards many moons ago. Also, I think that's it. The Stabilizer with B-Movie Bingo at the IMA. So go to the IMA's website for more information on that. Moving on. Are we caught up on that? Yeah, because the drive-ins are closed. It's too damn cold. And Fargo outside.
Yeah, can you imagine?
No. And it's funny because I'm a lifelong Midwesterner, and I can't handle lifelong Midwesterners complaining about the cold when there's no snow on the ground. Now, this is not – fortunately, it's not been with my family.
As he turns and fixes his glare to this side of the family.
Yeah. No, it finally – well, I would have arguments with Lynn, and she would finally just say, I'm cold. With the point of you can't argue that. I can't say, no, you're not.
Yeah.
You're crazy. So
– think warm.
Yes, ghost dear. Yeah, I got to imagine that. We'll have to work on that field trip. We shall see. New on DVD and Blu-ray, speaking of musicals, I guess the big title to come out this week is Jersey Boys.
Clint
Eastwood directed film version of the musical about Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. And Christopher Walken's in it. He plays one of the businessmen helping out with the guys. And I've not seen it on stage, and I know it is story wise, it is more than just a quote unquote jukebox musical. Mm-hmm. So, again, this Eastwood, another guy who's 80 and still directing. So keep going on that. Stop talking empty chairs, but keep going on that. It's really well done. Music's a lot of fun, and I enjoyed myself despite the fact that this film...
Is this the one where he said, I enjoyed myself despite myself?
No, yeah, kind of. Despite the fact that story-wise, it brings absolutely nothing new to the table. If you've seen any film about a musical group or a band, Dreamgirls, The Commitments, Let It Be is not on Blu-ray, and apparently will never be until even after Ringo and Paul die. But any group, any band film you've seen about a dysfunctional band or a group, you've seen that. There are the egos, there's the money problems, there's law problems, there's the women problems, and the substance problems, and musical numbers. But it's not a quote unquote musical. There's less dancing in this than there is with you guys. You know, there is a kind of a theatrical curtain call at the end of the film. But it's a film with a lot of music in it, and it's worth renting. I think this is probably a perfect rental for that. Also out on Blu-ray and DVD, How to Train Your Dragon 2, Kobe, still training.
I've not seen the first one, but I remember when the first one came out.
Really
that
good.
That was like, yeah.
You should. Yeah,
that
you
was one of your that. Favorite movies that year.
Yeah, it was a good animated film. Very smart. And still also out on DVD and Blu-ray is Tammy, Melissa McCarthy's Vanity Project that she co-wrote and produced with her husband. And I will say this, showing Tammy to my family did, and also the fact that you have a little bit of stunt casting with Susan Sarandon playing her grandmother, and they're in a car together. So it did inspire me to show my daughter Thelma and Louise. So I will give that film the credit for that. I know there's been really good reviews of McCarthy in St. Vincent, the new Bill Murray film, and partly I think because she's not just doing Fat Woman Fall Down Go Boom, which, you know, she's been doing for she does that a bit in Tammy. She's done that in other films. A few of the films I have not seen, so I have not grown tired of it yet. My concern.
A few films you've not seen. What one?
Identity Thief. I never saw Identity Thief. And
I haven't either.
I saw The Heat, saw Bridesmaids. My concern is I like her, and you know, I've seen bits of Mike and Molly. I'm worried that she's going to become Kevin James with an Oscar nomination. So I think she can do more than that. Of course, she's making more money than all this entire studio put together. So what does she care? And then the comedy Let's Be Cops. I don't know anybody who saw this
with Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, although he was good in Fruitvale Station.
No, I didn't see that.
It's good. It's good. That's the one. Is the kid who was shot in Oakland, and it was one of the first incidents that was filmed on a camera phone. Really good performance. That okay. Old titles. Oh, it's a good week for 70s films, Kobe. Little inside joke. Sometimes someday we will bring back the Phoenix Rise. That is what is Kobe watching
when I watch something.
When you watch something, that helps. But there were a few films from the 1970s, my favorite era of filmmaking, that I would share with my pal, and Kobe informs me that the 70s were
different time,
different time. That's his way of saying film slow. However, sir. There are some titles. These are ones that I was really hoping these would come out on Blu-ray. I'm hoping that there's a lot of bells and whistles because I'm that guy. I will get those, and so, as opposed to upgrading from DVD to Blu-ray, just like we had to with VHS to DVD. So, from 1973 and its sequel from 1976, White Lightning and Gator. Two car films starring Burt Reynolds, pre-Smokey and the Bandit. Now, White Lightning is the story of Gator McCluskey, a guy who turns state's witness to go after a corrupt sheriff played by Ned Beatty. This was Beatty's follow-up to Deliverance. Good job, Ned. Stunt coordinator was Hal Needham. Really cool drive-in. I mean, this is as I tell the darn kids on my lawn, real stunts done by real stunt people, real cars jumping over things, and flying and driving fast and going
crashing.
Yeah, real crashes. But there's a famous scene, and it's in Hal Needham's memoir or Mumiere, if you're John Malkovich, of a stunt where the car is supposed to leap over a dirt pile ramp. You know all those ramps they have in Georgia for Dukes of Hazzard? They're just kind of they're ramp shaped. Hey, how convenient! But he hits the ramp and he's supposed to land on a moving barge, and it happened, but not perfectly. The car half the front half of the car landed on the barge. The other is just kind of hanging off the edge. Well, they kept that. They can't do a second take. It's a low budget film, and so they kept it.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool stuff.
Cool.
Gator, of course, was the sequel to that, and it was Burt Reynolds' directorial debut with 70s villain Jerry Reed and everybody's favorite cinematic TV reporter, Lauren Hutton.
Mm.
You know, Kobe, I think this is the time of the show where you need to Google Lauren Hutton. As Sammy Terry would say, vintage chicks. I bring up an actress and I get a blank stare. And I'm like, go Google image. So now, don't let the teeth fool you. It's an endearing quality. So there, guys of an age know exactly what I'm talking about.
Indeed.
Okay. Also out on Blu-ray, Criterion has put out not one but two Monty Hellman westerns, The Shooting and Ride in the Whirlwind from the late '60s, both starring Warren Oates and a really fairly young Jack Nicholson before Easy Rider. The other Burt Reynolds movie, Sam Whiskey, a Western comedy he did with Clint Walker, Ozzie Davis, and Angie Dickinson from 1969. Burt Lancaster double feature. This is a heavy 5 hours. Birdman of Alcatraz and Judgment at Nuremberg. Judgment at Nuremberg is the story of the Nazi war trials. Spencer Tracy, Maximilian Schell, Judy Garland, old haggard Judy Garland, old haggard really? Montgomery Clift. The Oscar winner out of this group, Maximilian Schell, who was a newbie, at least to American audiences, and was able to stand toe-to-toe with Richard Widmark, Burt Lancaster, Spencer Tracy, and a young William Shatner. Just a huge cast. And if you're in the courtroom dramas, and actors love courtroom dramas because a lot of speeches. And you guys, you have lots of speeches. So that is out there as well. From 1960, and I was debating with somebody on Facebook about this. The Don Siegel directed. Don Siegel, of course, directed Clint Eastwood in Dirty Harry, directed him in The Beguiled, the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Just a really fine, streamlined director. But he directed Elvis Presley in a film called Flaming Star, and he plays a guy who's married to an Indian. They have a half breed son, and they're torn in the middle of a village fight between the white man and Native Americans. Barbara Eden is in this film as well. And this was in the early part. This was before Elvis started churning out the same movie three times a year throughout most of the 1960s. But this is an actual film with real acting and no twisting at the discotheque and a real director. I mean, Elvis was directed by Don Siegel and Michael Curtiz. Directed him in King Creole, the guy who directed Casablanca. So there's your link between Elvis Presley and Humphrey Bogart. That's what you get here at Film Sociology. And then finally from 1976, because they needed to make another one of these. Now, gentlemen, you might remember. Do you remember the film Mandingo?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's partial inspiration for Django Unchained.
Right.
Because you needed, apparently in the 70s, you needed a plantation melodrama based on a very controversial novel. Well, its sequel is now out on video called Drum, which stars Ken Norton playing a different character than he did play in Mandingo. Because if you saw the end of Mandingo, Ken Norton's character doesn't end well. Pitchfork, boiling pot, not good.
Not good.
And he shows up in here again playing a different character, Warren Oates, and if I get this, which I probably will because I like trashy 70s cinema, Cove, our girl, Pam Grier.
Oh.
Yes, we are pro Pam Grier here at Film Sociology. Speaking of which, have you inflicted Black Mama, White Mama on the household yet?
No, not yet. I think I might get to that tomorrow.
Okay. See, we have an annual bet involving fantasy football, and either way, Kobe's going to see a good movie of some kind. If my team wins, which they didn't, I show him a movie of my choosing, just enough to make his eyebrows sweat a little bit.
Usually in the scary or freaky subgenre.
Not always. Not that scary. Not that freaky. But if his team wins, which they did, I find a Pam Grier movie for him to enjoy. Because, sure. You know, it's a win-win, really.
Yep.
So Black Mama, White Mama is basically a 70s Filipino version of The Defiant Ones. Only replace Tony Curtis and Sidney Poitier with Pam Grier and a white lady.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think Ferris Wheat Bianca is going to get the whole Pam Grier thing with this one.
Yeah, probably still. See, that's the thing.
You need to start with Jackie Brown.
Yeah,
that's definite. So,
yeah.
Well, guys, I'm gonna open up the forum now. You guys have been busy, I know, but what have you guys seen recently? I'll open it up. The floor is open, gentlemen.
Well, just this week I was watching High and Low by Kurosawa. Mm-hmm. On Hulu, and I hadn't seen that film before, so it was pretty interesting detective novel.
Yeah, and that's the kidnapping story.
Yes, it's the kidnapping
story. I would say if you cared for or even remember the Ron Howard, Mel Gibson film Ransom, this is a better version of that.
Oh yeah, totally.
And and yeah, it's a kidnapping that, of course, goes as far as the drop off. Things don't go as smoothly as planned, and it's also a contemporary role for Toshirô Mifune. We're used to seeing him as a samurai, inflicting all sorts of pain, but different performance from him in this one.
Oh so. Yeah,
gents, seen anything lately?
Well, I just what I've watched. On television, which I'll surprise you by saying that when first time around, I never saw the movie Patton.
Mm.
Never saw it.
And it happens.
And
it happens
so
to the best of us. It happens to film show hosts as well. So. What'd you think of Patton?
Well, it's amazing. Of course, I know the character of George Scott of Patton himself, and then George C. Scott, of course, being awarded for his role there.
But watching a hockey game and turning it down anyway.
Exactly, yeah. Right. But I thought as I was watching that and looking and thinking about the show and J.K. Simmons, there's a lot of similarity, I think, in just a driven character to do what they thought was the right thing. And even though, in Patton, of course, you see what happens. He gets reprimanded and his hand smacked for kind of going across the line. But and he was driven, passion, and the show here with Simmons, the same kind of thing.
I got to meet Carl Malden at the Heartland Film Festival many, many moons ago,
yeah.
And he talked about Patton, not to me personally, to a whole audience. But, yeah, I get one-on-one time with Carl. But he tells a story about there's a scene where he's reprimanding Omar. He plays Omar Bradley, and he's reprimanding Patton. And he goes to the director, and he says, I should be just tearing into this guy. Mm-hmm. And the director's like, you don't really need to. Well, why not? This guy, he defied me. He did this. Why shouldn't I be yelling at him? And he goes, because you got one more star on your helmet more than he does.
Exactly.
So mm-hmm. Wise move on. That film was the first film I watched in my film genre class at the Ball State University. And sorry, Dwayne. That's really to my.
I think you're on your own here.
That's really to my Ohio friends. But anyway, that was our film. That was our war film that we watched, and then we discussed it afterwards. And it was great because half the class thought he was a hero, and the other half thought he was a sadist.
Sure.
And I think that's the most powerful thing about that picture is. You know, he slaps a kid,
mm-hmm.
you know, calling him weak, and then he mm-hmm. runs out like he's a Fairbanks with a pistol, with a handgun, shooting at a plane that's gunning at him. I mean, just, yeah, he was a larger-than-life character, most definitely.
Indeed.
So, Dwayne, have you seen anything lately?
I have not. I see mostly stage plays.
Which is what you should be doing. You should go. See, I'm getting the desk now on the radio.
Opening next Friday.
Next Friday is Hawaiian Shirt Day.
Am I allowed to mention one that's opening next week?
Please
do.
That
I really want to see.
Yes.
The Theory of Everything. Stephen Hawking.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes,
that's yes. We're finally getting that because we're Indianapolis. So, all right. Just a reminder: the Irvington Creative Music Plus Film Festival having at the Irving Theater and Irvington Vinyl. brownpapertickets.com for information. Check out the documentary. 1776, November 21st, 22nd, 23rd, 28th, 29th, 30th. Fridays and Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 2 at Ivy Tech with the Belfry. But it's at Ivy Tech. Plenty of space. You see these guys stretch their legs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can go to thebelfrytheater.com for reservations. Guys, thank you for hanging out.
You.
We really,
thank
really
you,
appreciate
Matt.
It.
Appreciate it. Thank
you
so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, words to live by.
Silent breed is people! Zardoz has spoken.
Fiddler on the Roof at Beef and Boards. And you should too. Get out of the house. And get off my lawn. You're listening to the Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. Go Lions, go Wings, go Pistons. Please.
Please. Please. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California. We gone.